Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
Those of us who are out there on the water, we are seeing the changes, and I'll tell you, it's pretty spooky.
Southeast Alaska troll fishermen will collect data to help researchers measure the impacts of climate change in the Gulf of Alaska. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, June 30th. Good evening, I'm Wesley Early. Also tonight, dip netting grows in popularity on the Kuskokwim River.
Sometimes there was two in my net, and I'd pull it straight in, throw them out of the net, club them, put it back in, and I got like 8 reds in 11 minutes.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you find yourself asking, what's next? The University of Alaska Anchorage can point you in the right direction. With over 100 fully accredited degree programs and certificates to choose from, plus resources to guide you through your academic experience, your future is in your hands. Whether you're starting over or taking your career to the next level, discover what's next at UAA. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
The Alaska Bureau of Investigation is looking into the fatal shooting by law enforcement officers of a heavily armed man who on Wednesday barricaded himself in his house near Esther. An Alaska State Trooper news release says the incident began Tuesday when 54-year-old Matthew Heller threatened a woman at his home with a rifle. She escaped unharmed and reported the threat. Troopers went to the residence near Standard Creek to talk with Heller, but they left after observing that he was heavily armed and had barricaded himself in his house. Trooper spokesman Austin McDaniel says the trooper's Northern Special Emergency Reaction Team, or CERT, went to Heller's home again the next day with an arrest warrant.
So the Alaska State Troopers Northern CERT team arrived at the residence right around 6:45 on Wednesday night.
The news release says the CERT team members saw that Heller had again barricaded himself in the house and had piled up some sandbags in front of doorways to prevent anyone from entering.
There was sandbags stacked about 4 feet high on the outside of the residence, kind of near doors.
McDaniel said Thursday that troopers and CERT members tried to negotiate with Heller over the next 3 hours to get him to come out of the house unarmed. At 10 p.m., officers saw Heller point a firearm at one of the CERT officers, and in response, several officers fired their weapons, fatally wounding him. The news release says the officers unsuccessfully tried to keep him alive, but he was declared dead at the scene. Alaska Bureau of Investigation officers then arrived to begin an investigation into the shooting. The news release says once that's completed, their findings will be reviewed by the Alaska Office of Special Prosecutions. The State Department of Public Safety will identify the officers who fired at Heller on Saturday. Meanwhile, climate change is changing the Gulf of Alaska. But in vast stretches of the ocean, a lack of data makes it hard for researchers to know how important species like salmon are handling that change. Now, 2 new citizen science programs will shed some light on the topic with a fleet of Southeast trollers whose fishing boats will double as research vessels. KTOO's Anna Canny has more.
Eric Jordan's life on the ocean began more than 70 years ago when his parents started taking him out on the family's troller. At 73, Jordan still fishes regularly out of Sitka, but he says a lot has changed in the waters of Southeast Alaska.
I was out there yesterday and seeing things that are truly dystopic. The lack of birds, the lack of fish in Salisbury Sound.
Jordan started his own operation in 1978, trolling for coho and chinook. In those days, he'd catch thousands of fish. But today, the ocean seems less abundant.
Those of us who are out there on the water, we are seeing the changes. And I'll tell you, it's pretty spooky.
In recent years, most species of Southeast salmon have had record low harvests. And the devastation still lingers from a Pacific marine heat wave known as the Blob that caused massive die-offs of marine animals. Scientists expect a future with warmer oceans and more marine heat waves that could rock the ocean ecosystem in Southeast Alaska. But major data gaps make it hard for them to determine how changing conditions might threaten the health of important species like salmon. With 2 new citizen science programs from Alaska Sea Grant and the Alaska Troller Association, scientists will get a hand from some people who know the salmon best, Southeast Alaska's troll fishing fleet. The first project will outfit boats with sensors to measure temperature and salinity. Tyler Heinen is an oceanographer at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. He says those two measurements are the heartbeat of the ocean.
Figuring out how temperature and salinity change over time and space gives you some clues on how the water is circulating around Southeast Alaska.
Knowing how the water circulates gives scientists a better idea of how food is circulating too. For instance, mixing ocean water triggers phytoplankton blooms,
which of course is the base of the food chain and sets off the production for all the higher trophic levels and fishing and all the things that we love.
Fishermen will take measurements at different depths along their fishing routes, and over time, the data will form a baseline. That will help researchers to determine what's normal and what might be linked to climate change. And for fishermen like Jim Moore, that data could add important context to decades of observations out on the water.
People talk about, oh my goodness, I've never seen that before. Well, I've been fishing 53 years. I saw that back in 1979. I saw it again in 1983. And, you know, the long-term data set is what's really valuable.
Back in the 70s, he participated in a logbook program where fishermen studied salmon populations in the Gulf of Alaska. This spring, Moore and a select group of fishermen have relaunched the program electronically. They'll record things like the species and number of salmon they're catching, where they catch them, the size of the fish, and their stomach contents.
Fishermen are natural scientists. And the trust built between management and science and the fishermen, I think, is a good thing because we're all working on it together.
Back in Sitka, Eric Jordan will be testing out the logbook program on his boat this summer. And he says, for fishermen, collaborating with scientists is a long game.
Trawlers have a long history of standing up for salmon, and we are going to do that.
Through these citizen science programs, Southeast troll fishermen can further solidify their role as environmental stewards. In Juneau, I'm Anna Canny.
Anchorage's Maine Electric Utility is planning to raise rates for the first time in 3 years. Chugach Electric Association is expected to file a proposal with state regulators today to increase electricity rates by about 6% for most residential and business customers from Anchorage to Whittier. That would mean, for example, if your monthly bill is around $150, you can expect it to go up by about $9 a month. Rates will ramp up starting with a smaller increase beginning September 1st. The last time Chugach increased its base rate was in 2020. CEO Arthur Miller said in a recent information session that the utility has seen a decrease in electricity sales in the last few years because customers are investing in energy efficiency measures, reducing their electricity use. Even as sales have fallen, Miller said inflation and supply chain disruptions have increased the utility's expenses.
As an electric utility, we are extremely capital intensive, so it's essential that we're able to adjust rates to make sure that we recover a lot of our costs, which are fixed costs in nature.
Chugach Chief Legal Officer Matthew Clarkson said another goal is to equalize the rate structure across their whole service area. In 2020, Chugach purchased the other major Anchorage utility, Municipal Light and Power, which historically served downtown Anchorage, Midtown, Airport Heights, and Mountain View. Since the sale, the former MLMP service area has continued to operate on a different rate structure.
This rate case really is about unification of rates for the two legacy service territories and to ensure that Chugach is getting back to recovering its full cost of services.
There will be a 30-day comment period for the public to weigh in on Chugach's proposal with the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. While the commission is reviewing Chugach's proposal, customers will see a smaller rate increase of 3.6% as of September 1st. If approved, the rest of the 6% increase will kick in next fall, September 2024. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Fairbanks residents donated dozens of bikes to Ukrainian refugees settling in Delta Junction.
And it's just to give the kids freedom, to give them normalcy, mm-hmm. to let them do what other kids are doing.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska needs more quality, licensed childcare providers. If you're interested in starting a childcare business, connect with threadalaska.org for support and guidance. There are several resources to get licensed and launched in Alaska. A licensed facility opens doors and opportunities for the business owner and creates a safer, more engaged place for children.
you can make a lasting difference in the lives of children and their families. This message sponsored by THREAD.
The organizers of an Anchorage music festival that inadvertently led the city to displace homeless campers earlier this month have pledged to donate to the city's lead homelessness nonprofit. The concert organizers planned and got permits back in the fall to hold the three-day Sundown Solstice Festival in Cuddy Family Midtown Park. In the spring, the city shut down its winter homeless shelters, sending hundreds of people into the streets, vacant lots, and parks, including the concert venue. City officials made a controversial decision to clear the encampments in and around the park ahead of the festival due to safety concerns about how concertgoers and campers might interact. Helen Fleming is part owner of concert production business Showdown Alaska. She says the situation led her to learn more about the outreach work that goes on in unofficial campgrounds around the city and to donate to the Alaska Coalition to End Homelessness. Showdown Alaska is holding online auctions for murals painted during the festival. It's pledging half of the winning bids to the coalition and the other half to the artists. Fleming says 30% of the sale price of leftover festival merchandise will also be donated to the coalition. Meanwhile, amid severely restricted fishing on the Kuskokwim River, one bright spot has been the abundant sockeye runs, giving subsistence users an opportunity to fill spaces on fish racks where Chinook and chum salmon might otherwise be. Although gillnets are the name of the game on the Kuskokwim, KYUK's Evan Erickson has noticed a rise in the popularity of one alternative gear type, the dip net.
On Thursday's edition of Fish Talk on KYUK, hosted by Sam Berlin, there was no shortage of excitement about the sudden arrival of thousands of red salmon on the Kuskokwim River and the much-discussed Friday set net opportunity.
Good luck to all the fishermen tomorrow. Byukchi.
Nick Smith, a Kuskokwim management biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, said that as many as 30,000 red salmon had been passing the Bethel sonar each day.
There's fish jumping all over the place. So yeah. If you're going to be putting out a set net tomorrow, it's probably going to have some sockeye in it.
I see jumpers everywhere. I quit counting. There's too many.
Avery Hoffman with the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission has been exploring the effectiveness of one gear type that can be used 24/7, the dip net. Berlin wanted to know more.
Let's hear a little bit about that. I've been hearing people dipping.
I put it in about maybe 10 feet in the water, about 5 feet deep, and I was catching lots.
Wow.
Sometimes there was two in my net, and I'd pull it straight in, throw them out of the net, club them, put it back in, and I got like 8 reds in 11 minutes, and I couldn't stop fishing. It was so much fun.
Dip nets are by no means a traditional fishing gear used along the section of the Kuskokwim River where Bethel lies, but recent years have seen a rise in their popularity as conservation has demanded severe restrictions on gillnet fishing. According to Hoffman, at least 16,000 sockeye have been harvested thus far on the river, with the handful of recent set and drift net opportunities contributing heavily to the count. Right in the middle of the gillnet closure, Hoffman has been armed with dip nets, scouting eddies along the Kuskokwim to collect data on the time of day, temperature, and weather conditions when sockeye can be caught.
But the thing about these dip nets, they are huge. This one is about five feet in diameter, and it's heavy. Really, really heavy. But yesterday, that was the first time I've tried it from the shoreline, and that does so much better. Less work. You kind of just stand there. You don't need to waste gas. But you do have to fight some mosquitoes if there's no wind.
Yeah.
Hoffman encouraged residents to take advantage of dip net rentals now available through ONC, the tribal organization for Bethel.
I just here to keep pushing for dip netting because it is unbelievably fun efficient in catches.
Yeah, young man like you, it should be fun. For a guy like me, that's a lot of work.
Hey, you would have a blast, Sam. I'm telling you. All you have to do is put the net in the water and hold it, and it kind of does itself.
It's easier than pulling the lead line.
Oh, yeah.
While fisheries managers have yet to announce additional gillnet opportunities on the Kuskokwim River following Friday's set net opener, it appears that dip nets may be catching on. In Bethel, I'm Evan Erickson.
According to the calendar, it's summer in Alaska, but you wouldn't know it from the weather. Anchorage and many other cities across the state are experiencing cloudy skies and cooler temperatures than normal. While that's lowered the risk of wildfires across the state, it's left many wondering if and when sunnier weather will arrive. Brian Brettschneider with the National Weather Service joins us for our Ask a Climatologist segment. Hi, Brian.
Hi there.
So, historically speaking, is this summer an outlier?
As far as below normal temperatures, it's really kind of a bullseye over Anchorage. There's a wide swath of the state that's a little bit cooler than normal. For Anchorage, so far through the about the 27th or 8th, it's the coolest summer since 2008. But if you look at, say, Fairbanks or Juneau or Bethel, in many cases, it's the coolest summer in only 2 or 3 years. I think for Bethel, it's about the coolest since 2014. So the perspective of where you're actually located matters, but we are definitely a little bit below normal in most locations.
You mentioned this is the coolest summer since about 2008. Was there anything special going on that year that led to that?
I still hear about 2008. People talk about the terrible summer of 2008. You know, this summer has some similarities to that in terms of the overall atmospheric pattern, but really everyone has its own kind of unique story to tell. And this year really is, the story is low pressure in the Bering Sea in western Alaska. And that drags down cooler air from farther north. And on the east side of that, the flow is southerly, so it brings in air from the open ocean, which is cooler because it's over cooler water, and it has a lot of moisture with it. You know, by historical perspectives, it's a little bit cooler than normal, but there's been many, many cooler summers. I think we do have a case of recency bias where the last, say the summer since about 2013, have been much warmer than they were historically. And so we've kind of acclimated ourselves to that. So this is really more like a summer of years gone by.
And I'm curious, I was reading about how there's a lower risk for wildfires across much of the interior and South Central. Do you think that that's going to continue as the summer goes on, or should we still anticipate an average wildfire season?
Well, through today's date, I believe only about 1,300 acres have burned statewide, which is easily in last place for the fewest number of acres burned, which of course is great. No fires, no smoke. That's something we haven't had to deal with this year. Of course, our neighbors in Canada are having a record fire season. And you could imagine if the upper level, you know, atmospheric pattern had shifted just 200 or 300 miles to the west, that would have been us this year. So sometimes small differences can have a big impact on our sensible weather and conditions.
So in South Central, the weather generally deteriorates as the summer goes on. You know, we're past the solstice. Should we expect this sort of lackluster summer such as it is to continue?
So I heard deteriorate and lackluster in the same sentence. So we're actually getting to the point where we're reaching our seasonal peak in Anchorage. That occurs about the second week of July or even the third week of July. That's when if you look at, say, what's the normal high temperature, that's where it maxes out. So we actually haven't gotten there yet. That happens earlier in the interior. So Fairbanks, on average, they peak in their temperatures right around the 4th of July. And, you know, as far as like when the rainy season typically sets in, there's a lot of variability. You know, last year it set in about the 7th or 8th of July, and it was here for good. This year, it's hard to say. I mean, we really haven't had a dry season like we typically do. So it's really hard to pin down how that's going to play out. But when we look forward into our monthly and seasonal forecasts, the new forecast that's going to come out later this week for the month of July is going to show South Central in below normal temperatures for the month of July and maybe some above normal for the North Slope and in a pretty consistent trend toward wetter than normal conditions across most of the state. So if that plays out, that would be good for the wildfire situation and maybe cause some grumbling among Alaskans who are looking for warmer weather.
Good for handling wildfires, not so good for getting a tan. Yes. Brian Brettschneider is a climatologist with the National Weather Service. Brian, thanks so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you find yourself asking, what's next? The University of Alaska Anchorage can point you in the right direction. With over 100 fully accredited degree programs and certificates to choose from, plus resources to guide you through your academic experience, your future is in your hands. Whether you're starting over or taking your career to the next level, discover what's next at UAA. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
Local sponsors do right by their business and for the community by supporting public media stations. Thank you for considering adding your corporate support. You'll be in good company.
Yamaha Motor Company, the Japanese manufacturer of motorcycles, boats, and other recreational vehicles, announced earlier this week that they were phasing out their snow machines. After over five decades since the first Yamaha snow machine model was released, the company said they plan to end sales of machines in North America after the 2025 model year. In a statement, the Japanese company said it aimed to grow its business through more environmentally friendly motors, and it would, quote, be difficult to continue a sustainable business in the snowmobile market, end quote. Quote. For many Alaskans, especially those living in northern Alaska, snow machines or snow goes, depending on your preference, are an essential part of winter travel. That's especially true for rural communities not connected by roads. For some, snow machines serve a recreational purpose. Mike Vassar is the executive director for Iron Dog, billed as the world's longest and toughest snowmobile race. The 2,500-mile course begins in Big Lake and travels north to the Seward Peninsula and Northwest Arctic before circling back. Vassar says the Yamaha phase-out would have minimal to little effect on the Iron Dog race.
It shouldn't have any impact on us. We haven't had a Yamaha sled entered in the race for at least 7 years, I think, nor have they been a sponsor, so...
While Vassar called the move a, quote, sad day for the snowmobile industry, he's not really losing sleep over it.
But I'm personally a Yamaha vintage collector and have been for a long, long time. So in my opinion, the value of my sleds just went through the roof because they're not going to be available anymore.
Yamaha thanked their dealers and customers for years of loyalty. They said parts availability and maintenance service will be available after the final production run in 2025. Yamaha's new 2024 snow machine models are in production and scheduled for fall delivery. Meanwhile, College Rotary Club in Fairbanks delivered 31 more bicycles Monday to give Ukrainian families that have come to Delta Junction to get away from the war back home. Kids got most of the bikes, but as KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, so did some parents and a couple grandparents.
The bicycle giveaway was supposed to begin at 4, but by then a couple dozen kids were already pedaling around Delta Community Park, test driving bikes. Middle schooler Alina Haidai had picked out a green mountain bike, and her mom, Tanya, chose a sweet white cruiser with a handlebar basket. Alina helped out with translating for her mom, but she could hardly contain her enthusiasm. Tanya smiled a lot, but was a bit subdued.
So, how do you feel about these bikes, guys?
Как тебе эти байки?
Good.
How about you, Alina? Is this a good thing? You're passionate?
Yeah, good.
Are you going to go riding tonight?
Yeah.
If kids are happy, moms are happy.
Pamela Flory is a board member of the College Rotary Club in Fairbanks, and she's the main organizer of the bicycle giveaway program.
And this is mostly moms without dads and husbands and partners. Yeah.
Most of the husbands and dads are still back in Ukraine fighting the Russian invasion of their country. A little over 100 Ukrainians came to Delta early last year, soon after the invasion began. Flory says the bikes are intended to give the children a break and allow them to just be kids.
And it's just to give the kids freedom, to give them normalcy, mm-hmm. to let them do what other kids are doing.
Most of the Ukrainians who've moved to Delta and a couple hundred others who've landed elsewhere in the state came to Alaska to live with family. Olga Barladyan's family came to Delta about 25 years ago.
I have in Ukrainian still relatives, my sister and my brother. He cannot live Ukrainian because his age. It's so sad.
Barladyan's mother, another brother, and cousin were allowed to leave and are with her in Delta. Her mom, Luba, came along for the bike giveaway, and before long, she hopped onto a kid's bike and took it for a spin.
She have a heart problem from birth, you know. I mean, this is good for her, have a bike.
It's also good because a bicycle will get her out of the house and around her neighborhood, says Svetlana Kravitz, who helps Ukrainians in Delta on behalf of Catholic Social Services. The Anchorage-based organization manages refugee and related issues for the U.S. State Department.
When you get this old, you can't learn the new language. Yeah, everything is different.
Yeah. Totally.
They don't drive because back in Ukraine, it's all public transportation or walking.
Oh, right.
And so they're cooped up in a house, not get out, not speak English, not, you know.
Flory says that's one of the reasons College Rotary was glad to expand its bike giveaway program to include parents and grandparents in Monday's bike giveaway. She said the organization and its partners were able to collect and repair enough bikes to give away 41 of them earlier this month and another 31 on Monday. In Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
A phone sat at the bottom of the Kenai River for 4 days last week until it was reeled in by an unsuspecting angler. And as KDLO's Riley Board reports, the story has a happy ending.
This weekend on the Upper Kenai, one angler caught something even rarer than a king salmon.
And she snagged something, and at first we thought it was a trout because of the way it was kind of wiggling in the water, and it wasn't pulling as hard as a salmon. And I saw her just reel this like black object out of the water. And it turned out to be an iPhone.
David Finocchio of Anchorage was fishing on the Kenai River with his mom, who was visiting from the East Coast. Just as Finocchio was reeling in a salmon, his mom pulled up the cell phone, clad in a high-tech case.
The tip of her hook had just like barely snagged the lip or like the edge of the case. And so she reeled it up and we were like, wow, what are the chances of that? That's amazing. It's probably, you know, toast.
Finocchio brought the phone home to Anchorage, plugged it in, and miraculously, it came back to life. The home screen pictured a couple skiing at Alyeska Resort, so he knew it had to belong to a local. He posted on Facebook and quickly reconnected with the owner. It turned out the phone had been at the bottom of the river for 4 days. Finocchio says everything about the process feels miraculous.
I bet if there was a phone in the bottom of the river and you were like, you could see it, you'd have a really hard time hooking it, even if you were trying. And so the fact just that she got it alone was like, that was enough for us. And then, you know, to think that we'd ever be able to like return it to its owner was definitely beyond what we thought was going to be possible that day.
He says, well, it was a successful salmon fishing day for him. His mom ultimately just caught the phone. The Russian River and Upper Kenai River opened to sport fishermen a month early, and the bag limit increased last weekend, bringing an influx of anglers. The river reached its escapement goal with 2 weeks left in the early run. In Kenai, I'm Riley Board.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Tim Ellis in Delta Junction, Anna Canny in Juneau, Kavitha George and Jeremy Shea in Anchorage, Evan Erickson in Bethel, Desiree Hagen in Kotzebue, and Riley Board in Kenai. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky is our producer, and I'm Wesley Early. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Would you like to play a part in the public media you enjoy? Consider becoming a member or corporate sponsor. Contact your public radio station to learn how. From one end of Alaska to the other and everywhere in between, public media works to provide quality programming and statewide news you can count on and news you can trust. Whether you're listening at home, at work, or in the car, we're grateful to be a part of your day. Thank you for tuning in. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.